This is Common Sense Radio. Straightforward and no excuses.
All right. Come on now.
This is the Steve Gruber Show.
Call me crazy.
Oh, yeah.
What I said was perfectly right and spot on accurate.
Boy's got a mouth like a cannon, always shooting it all.
Stop. I mean, you're way off script.
Got it in me. Gonna quit until it all comes out.
Hey, boy.
Yeah, you know, it's not cynical, it's common sense.
Pay attention to me when I'm talking to you.
I'm gonna rock the nation. Rock the nation.
Genuine, accountable, and raw. Here is Steve Gruber.
It's Wednesday, time to roll up your sleeves and get back to work. You've had a nice few hours off. Time to get back to it now. It's the Steve Gruber Show. Greatly appreciate your support. I direct your attention to SteveGruber.com for all the things you need related to this program, follow-up, information, and such. For example, if you'd like to listen live, go to SteveGruber.com, click the Listen Live button, bam, there you are. Podcasts, like yesterday's report from Utah State University and others saying that this whole notion of green energy is costing you a fortune. These can all be found at SteveGruber.com. So where to start today? I mean, there's any given day I look at this and I go, all right, where do I start? Because there are six lead stories any given day in the way the world used to be. But with this president, this administration, the flailing and failing foreign policy, Hillary Clinton's ongoing email scandals, and, of course, Donald Trump's ongoing ego, these things all come together to say, you know, what's number one today? I think I'm going to start with a little bit of politics and Hillary hit by a Cadillac. Hillary Clinton hit by a Cadillac, if you didn't hear about this. Hillary Clinton, the flailing front runner of the Democratic nomination for president, got hit again yesterday, this time by a Cadillac. More specifically, she was hit with the so-called Cadillac insurance plans, which unions across the nation offer their members oftentimes. The elite plans become a campaign issue because Obamacare levies a stiff tax on the high-end insurance policies. Remember, they got a break from it to begin with, but now those taxes are back and the unions are screaming like a smashed cat. In the wee hours yesterday, Clinton, in an effort to breathe life into her gasping campaign, made a policy decision to buy union votes. I mean, to exempt unions from the punishing tax on their insurance policies. It is pandering at its best. Hey, relax, everybody. I'm going to tax all of those other idiots, but I'll let you guys slide just as long as you vote for me next November. Good. That's the way it works. All right, good. Wink, wink. But for Clinton, the big government giveaway didn't pay off the way she intended. In fact, it seems she may have blown her cover with this one. Mm-hmm. And got nothing in return. The Teamsters yesterday said they would be holding back any endorsement and want to meet with top Republican candidates instead. For real. In fact, Republican frontrunner Donald Trump, who has a long-running relationship with the Teamsters, may be the one who garners the union's endorsement. That's right. Surprise! Did the Donald just hit another one over the fence? He may have. Either way, he made contact. So, who was the last Republican to garner the Teamsters' support? A little history quiz for you there. Who was the last Republican president, or nominee, I should say, to garner the Teamsters' support? Well, my friends, that would be Ronald Reagan. In 1980, he created the Reagan Coalition with Blue Dog Democrats and others in the middle. Oh, but don't worry. Hillary isn't fazed a bit. I mean, just ask her. She fully expected this to be a very competitive race. And she expected all these things, you know, and Bernie Sanders, uh-huh, and I'm the tooth fairy, okay? Okay. Yeah, the Teamsters deal is an embarrassment, to say the least. They were behind closed doors, 26 of them, and refused to endorse Hillary Clinton, the 26-member board. Let's look at another report here. Decided unanimously to withhold the presidential endorsement. They want to sit down with the Republicans and figure out where the Republicans stand. Yeah, that's quite a change of events, to say the least. Since 1980, the unions have lined up solidly behind the Democratic nominee, barely asking a question. And now their support is no longer available. So that's what's happening domestically. What's happening in foreign policy? Well, pretty simple. Vladimir Putin now has received permission from Parliament for Russian forces to take place in bombing raids in Syria 2 days after the Russian leader spoke to the United Nations and called for an international coalition against terrorism to fight the Islamic State. Meanwhile, the Russians are calling for the United States to get out. Here's a quote. You all know well that in the territory of Syria and Iraq, a number of countries are carrying out bombing strikes, including the United States. These actions do not conform with international law. To be legal, they should be supported either by a resolution of the UN Security Council or be backed by a request from the country where the raids are taking place. That came from Sergei Ivanov. Part of Putin's team. And Ivanov went further and said the Syrian president Bashar al-Assad had asked Russia for military assistance, making Russia's actions legitimate, and the United States needs to pack up and leave. Are you embarrassed yet that Vladimir Putin is barking orders at the United States and, more importantly, at the United States military? So weakened, are we? So transformed is the United States. So fundamentally transformed by Barack Obama that our military is being shooed. Shooed out. Get out, get out, get out, get out. Go on. Go on. Take your guns and your bombs and run along. Putin told the United Nations, by the way, the world should come together to fight the Islamic State in the same way it joined forces to fight Hitler. Because in Russia's education, they teach their children about the greatness of Russia and that Russia actually won the Second World War. They forget to point out that it was the Allies that fought from the South Pacific to Alaska to Europe to Africa to win the Second World War, primarily because of the efforts and the industrialization of America. But not in Russia. You see, while people here in America tear America down every day, Vladimir Putin tells his people how great Russia is. And the end result? Russia telling America to get out of Syria. It's 14 after on the Steve Gruber Show. There's a nice cold slap in the face. Welcome to it.
The Steve Gruber Show. American values with Midwestern common sense.
You know, while I'm on the topic, British Prime Minister David Cameron was also at the UN and then appeared on CBS this morning yesterday. He said this whole deal with Vladimir Putin making a deal with Bashar al-Assad is a phony solution to the problems in Syria and of the region. But what's not phony are the tens of thousands, the hundreds of thousands of refugees that are pouring out of the region as a result of this ongoing war. And there's a real problem there that Cameron also addressed.
We're taking 20,000 straight from the refugee camps. The difference we have with some of our European partners is we think if you keep saying we're going to spread people out once they've got to Europe, you're actually encouraging people to make the journey. So we've said Britain is the most generous donator to the Syrian refugee camps after the United States. We've spent 10 times more than some other European countries our size. And we say concentrate on the region, help keep those people in the region, work with the Lebanese, work with the Jordanians, fund those camps, fund the World Food Programme. But we will take some people directly from the camps. We're not going to take the people who arrive on the continent of Europe.
So they're not going to take the ones that get to the fence and demand that they be let in. Which let me direct your attention to something else here now. Let me direct yourself to Lutheran Social Services. This is the group that has been actively bringing illegal aliens from Central America and placing them all over the country, including here in Michigan. Some of the more active chapters are in West Michigan and Grand Rapids. And Lutheran Social Services confirming to WWMT-TV that they do, in fact, have some Syrian refugees that they've brought so far and intend to bring more. Lutheran Social Services expects to settle several hundred refugees in West Michigan 2015, not all from Syria, but a fair amount from Syria. And my concern is the same as everybody else's. My concern is what agenda do they bring with them when they arrive. President Obama says 10,000 Syrian refugees could be coming to the U.S. over the next year. And that gives me pause, gives me concern as to where we are. Reason being, we don't know what the background is. Meanwhile, Republican Governor Rick Snyder said yesterday that his administration is also talking with federal officials on the role the state of Michigan can play in accepting more refugees from war-torn Syria and the Middle East, building on Michigan's century plus of Arab immigration and taking a different tone from some Republican presidential candidates. But I think it gives us pause here to at least understand what the parameters are, what the guidelines are, what the bar is that you have to meet to come here. Snyder spoke at the inaugural meeting of the State Commission on Middle Eastern American Affairs, which works within the Department of Civil Rights to monitor, evaluate, and make recommendations to the governor. He helped create the commission earlier this year. He told reporters that there is a real crisis in the Middle East with refugees. Isn't it part of our nature as Americans to say, how can we help people in need? His remarks follow those by Republican presidential candidate and Detroit native Ben Carson, this is from the AP, by the way, who said last week while visiting his home state that he welcomes immigrants, but they cannot alter who we are. And that part's true. You have to assimilate. It's okay to have your ethnic neighborhoods and so forth. Little Italy, whatever. Chinatown, whatever it may be, right? But as a whole, you have to assimilate. That's what America's about. It's not coming here and snubbing your nose at America. You can't come here from some third world dump and then start screaming at America so you can turn America into the same third world dump that you ran away from. How would that make any sense? Oh, yeah, well, it didn't have to make sense, Steve. Well, thank you for that. Doesn't have to make sense. We're going to come from our third world dump and we're going to demand that you do things our way. It reminds me of people, I live out in the country, as you can well imagine. It reminds me of people that move out to the country, then complain, there's chickens out here that make noise and cows, they smell badly. Yeah, sometimes they do. And every now and then, they actually spread manure on the fields in the neighborhood. No, for real. And then there's lots of flies and it smells really bad. That ought to be illegal. That's what it reminds me of. People want to come to this country and demand how we run things around here. You know what? We've been running things pretty damn well for 250 years. Because we believe in self-determination. We believe in pulling our weight. We believe in working as one, no matter where we came from. And collectively pulling the wagon. We don't believe in breaking up into little groups get rid of the hyphen. Throw the hyphen away, pick up some work gloves, and we'll be a lot better off. I'm serious. If you throw away the hyphen and pick up a couple pairs of work gloves, we'll be a lot better off. Rick Snyder, by the way, briefly considered a presidential run this time around. He isn't bad-mouthing anybody, but maintains that the refugees who have cleared security hurdles have something to offer economically and culturally and should be warmly welcomed. Michigan has one of the nation's largest Middle Eastern populations. In fact, I would say the largest. And Snyder said he would, quote, love to see it grow even faster and flourish, end quote. Though added, there's no specific number of refugees being discussed. Well, that's what the governor's saying here. What do you say? 888-900-9966. 888-900-9966. We've had large Middle Eastern populations in Dearborn and elsewhere around this state for many years. Seems to have been a benefit to the economy and so forth. But what say you? 888-900-9966. It's Tuesday on the Steve Gruber Show.
Taking a closer look at the stories that affect you most with a big dose of common sense.
Find your eyes with trembling mermaids, and you touch the distant beaches with tales of brave Ulysses. How his naked ears were tortured by the sirens sweetly singing for the sparkling.
All right, welcome back to it. It is Wednesday. Wednesday on the Steve Gruber Show. I appreciate your support. You can find out more at stevegruber.com or dial and be part of the program, 888-900-9966. We also have Facebook, of course. Why wouldn't we? Our next guest has an interesting story to share with us from Traverse City. It's an interesting little story here. Bob Campbell. I mean, he knows good book writing material when he sees it. Former Detroit Free Press editor. Nearly finished the documentary, The Chinese Mayor, when Millikan Auditorium went black. Strong winds, gale force raging outside. Where do we go from there? Well, we better get him on, better get him up to speed here. Bob, welcome to the program.
Good morning, and thank you for having me.
How long ago did you leave the paper?
I left right after the 2012 November election.
So fairly recently. Recently, you're still out finding your way around. So tell me about this. This book, this crowdsourced chronicle of this August storm. Tell me about this.
Okay, well, it originated like this. I happen to live on Skidamuck Point Road, which is what happened to be one of the hardest-hit spots, the hardest-hit spot in Grand Traverse County. There were places, Glen Arbor Township, on the Leelanau Peninsula that were arguably impacted even more by the storm.
Just pound it. And just so for the listeners, just for the benefit of anybody listening in now, this is August 2nd of this year when these storms came through, and they raged pretty much from, Harbor Springs south along the Lake Michigan coastline. You know, Sleeping Bear Dunes got pounded. The area where you were got just pounded with, and it wasn't a tornado, it was just straight line winds, right?
Correct. It was what they call, the meteorologists explained to me in the aftermath, a bow echo storm. It is very, very uncommon in Michigan, but relatively common in the tornado alley, the Oklahoma, Texas, Kansas, Missouri, states like that. And it, As it hit the Leelanau County shoreline, you would see, and I know you can't do this on radio, but the radar shows this very pronounced, almost looks like an archer's bow,
right?
That widens, and whereas a tornado would have a relatively small width to it, incredible force and damage, this could be miles wide, and it was miles wide in many places, and it just did incredible damage. It brought down so many trees, and that was the big thing. but there was also a lot of hail associated with it, and that was a big, big problem for the farmers who own fruit orchards.
Oh yeah, the got pounded as well.
Apple and pears.
Yeah, because the even the fruit that survived on the trees was damaged, and so therefore, if the skin was torn on the fruit itself, it was damaged. But the trees, because the cadmium layer was destroyed on many of the trees, so a lot of those orchards are going to suffer tree loss because of that storm. Now, I wrote it out just north of you. I was on the southern edge of Lake Charlevoix in Boyne City the day the storm came through. We avoided the right in the vortex. So you got hit right square on, and I got kind of a glancing blow up there. But even where we were, you know, it was merciless.
Yeah,
brutal. I mean, so you decided to write this book. Tell us about the book.
Well, so in the aftermath of the storm, a very good friend of mine, Doug Weaver, had read in the Traverse City newspaper, the Record Eagle, that Skigamog Point was one of the hard-hit areas, and sent me an email asking how we did, and my wife and I needed to leave the morning after the storm because my daughter was getting married in Virginia. So we were down there, but had seen enough of it, had been able to get out, got some tree people here the very next morning to get out of our driveway because we had 7 trees over our driveway. And I wrote him a long explanation, as I'm usually pretty long-winded and over-explain things, and at the end of it, I said, Doug had just started up a new publishing company in Traverse City with a couple partners, and I said, you know, I think there might be a quick turnaround book in this.
And so you decided to go ahead and do that. Apparently, he had an interest in Doug Weaver, and you decided to get together on this project.
Doug has two partners, Ann Stanton and Heather Shaw, and he met with them, and Heather came up with the idea that there was my part of it. Somebody needed to basically do the journalism for the book, to go out and do lots of interviews and tell the best stories and explain the science of the storm and all that. But it was Heather's idea to make this a crowdsourced photo book, because it's not like you can hire the best photographer in the world and ask him to go out and recapture the images that people saw as the storm was moving through. So I would say a very high percentage of the pictures in the book is 80-85% photographs. And most of those came from people who shot them with their iPhones, their Samsung, because they were there. They pulled them out of their pockets and shot what they were seeing in front of them.
It's a long way from when you started in the paper business, isn't it?
Oh, very long.
Yeah, people didn't have those back in the day. You know, heck, we were lucky to have a Polaroid Instamatic or whatever, Kodak Instamatic or a Polaroid, you know, instant camera. And now everybody's got cameras, it seems. So you do, I mean, you do have the benefit of having resources we didn't have in the years gone by.
Yes, I would. I mean, you have seen how people's cell phones and the cameras on them, not only for still pictures, but videos, have become a very important source for news sources. As well as documenting situations that have become important for law enforcement.
Well, sure, absolutely, because you can, you know, you've got a video witness, if you will, a video witness of just about everything. Anyway, how can people find this book, Bob? We got to run, but real quickly, where can they find it?
Well, they can find it in Horizon Books in Traverse City. And there will be other sources locally in the area. There are several sources up in Glen Arbor. They can get it on Amazon, both as a Kindle edition and the actual Hold in Your Hands book. And, yes, it's widely available and becoming more widely available up here very quickly, and it's selling fast.
All right. Stormstruck, when Supercharged wins, slammed Northwest Michigan by Bob Campbell and his team. Check it out. It's Wednesday on the Steve Gruber Show. We'll be right back.
Getting your day started with news from around the state and around the world. Common Sense Radio. This is the Steve Gruber Show.
Back down. No, I won't back down. You can stand me up at the gates of hell, but I won't back down.
All right, welcome back to it. It is Wednesday. It's Wednesday here on the program. Anytime you want to be able to reflect back on an interview, go to stevegruber.com, check out the podcast powered by Podbean, and you can go back and reflect, share with your friends, whatever it may be. If you have some questions or you want to go back and check facts and so forth. Our next guest is Rich Robinson with the Michigan Campaign Finance Network. Lobbyists spent $21 million in the most recent reporting period, but the problem is, disclosure is poor. Monitoring is poor, at least according to Rich Robinson and the people of the Campaign Finance Network. Rich, welcome to the program.
Thanks. Good morning. Glad to be with you.
$21 million spent in what time period?
Well, that's from January through the end of July in 2015.
Clearly, and Rich, you and I are in the wrong business.
Yeah, it certainly is a money business.
Yeah, there's a lot of cheese there. Yeah, there's a lot of cash flying around. Let's see here. Multi-client firms, as usual, dominated the list of top spenders among lobbyists. Governmental consultant services, $947,000. James Karub and Associates, $734,000. Kelly Cawthorn, $540,000. The list goes on and on and on. So I guess my question to you is, you say that there is not enough oversight and not a lot of disclosure, not as transparent as you would like, I take it. What do you mean?
Well, there are two things. First, about the multi-client firms. They make a statement about what they spend in aggregate representing their clients. They also are required to file a list of the clients they represent, but they don't make any representation of how much they spend representing each of their clients. And so it amounts to a black box. This is what we spend for all our clients. And the public doesn't really have any knowledge of how much these multi-client firms spend representing any individual interest group. So, for example, right now, energy policy is a matter of some considerable interest. Yeah, the energy companies spending money on campaign contributions and lobbying. They spend money on lobbying in their own right. They also use the multi-client firms, and we don't know how much they're spending through the multi-client firms, so we don't really see how hard they're pushing on that particular issue.
One of the things that also comes to mind here, and I just want to make sure we get some of these things in so people can understand where some of this money is going, but one of these things you call the lobbyist's SNAP, or Supplemental Nutrition Assistance for Politicians, because so much money is spent by these, out of this $21 million, a whole pile of it was spent on lunch and dinner and wine and food services and so forth. Incredible amounts of money, in fact.
Well, and that's the other major area where the disclosure is deficient. They do spend a lot of money on providing food and beverage hospitality. They also provide travel and accommodations for office holders, lobbyable officials to attend their association meetings or whatever purposes they might have. And there are reporting thresholds. Unless the spending hits those thresholds, whatever they're spending doesn't have to be reported. And so to give a sense of what this all means, there's $112,000 spent in these first 7 months of 2015 on group food settings. All of that is reported, but the lobbyists report that they spent another $425,000 providing food, beverage, and hospitality. But The portion of that names the beneficiary is only $63,000. So presumably the rest of it failed to reach those reporting thresholds.
Well, you'd like to believe so anyhow.
Pardon me?
You'd like to believe so anyhow. You'd like to believe that they're following the rules, but there's no way to tell for sure.
Well, that's right. And what this does conceal is, say my association is having a meeting at Grand Traverse Resort, and somebody on the committee which has oversight over our particular industry, why don't you come up, give us a 5-minute briefing on legislative action in our committee, and hey, we got a deluxe weekend for you and your wife. None of it has to be reported because it falls below that reporting threshold of $775.
I'm going to restate this. I'm in the wrong business twice in one conversation. You know, I should have been a lobbyist or I should have been a politician. Either way, right?
Well, the point that I'm trying to make in this release is all of this should be available to the public to know, so we know those relationships between office holders and the industries and the interest groups that are supporting them, both through this lobbying activity and through the campaign finance world. And a lot of that isn't really transparent either, but that's another story.
I guess you give a lot of credence to the folks that say there's a lot of money in politics, maybe too much money in politics. The problem is, you know, no matter what is ever done about it, I mean, there's a lot of talk about money in politics. At the end of the day, there just seems to be more money in politics. It never seems to correct itself, and it doesn't mean, you know, the best efforts from any side of the conversation. Anyhow, Rich, I'll give you the last word.
Well, I would say this. I don't think we're going to do much to control spending in politics, whether it's through campaign finances or lobbying. But I certainly feel like there is an ethical imperative to make it all transparent and disclosed.
No, that would be nice. So any politician being upfront about what's going on. Rich Robinson, greatly appreciate your time today with the Michigan Campaign Finance Network. I'm sure we'll talk sometime soon.
Thanks.
Thank you so much. There it is. $21 million spent, and piles of that on free lunches, free dinners, free drinks, and garnering support from politicians for various efforts and initiatives and policies and, of course, law. And that's the way the game's played. And if you don't like the way the game is played, you should make an effort to change it. 52 after the hour on a Wednesday. It's the Steve Gruber Show.